Well, this morning I'm going to kind of build off of what I had last week, and I'm still getting the title together, so bear with me. But I got several verses to read, so we're just going to start somewhere and go from there. We're just going to go to John 12:26, where we're going to start this morning. Last week we talked about the new kind of social church we have going on, where worship and service, I mean, it's all done together. It's like lumped into one big lump sum. It's like you're making a thing of dough. Everything just gets dumped in one thing. You mix it up and let it rise, and there it is. And that's the end of it. But what I look at today is something a little more, something a little older than this generation's used to looking at. And everywhere I look, you know, every time you look at an advertisement and even at work, everything's got to be new. Everything's got to be exciting. Everything's got to be some new thing that we've thought up to make us better than everybody else. And that's everywhere you look. You know, all the cars I sell, everyone wants to know, well, what's new with this one? Or a new body style comes out and everyone flocks to it because it's new. It's exciting. It's important. And they tell us that it's only as exciting as you make it out to be. And so one of the biggest things in selling, they say, is get them excited, get them in finance, and then you're done. So that's a technique in sales they use. Get excited about this new car that you're wanting now, and then get them approved and get them signed up and out, and make them leave the curb, because in Missouri, it's not yours till you leave the curb. So I feel like we've adapted that mentality into the church. We get them in, we get them excited, we get them signed up, and then we get them gone. And so it's the same way. That's the way we operate now. Well, it used to be very much different. It used to be that we didn't have to have a group of people serving with us in order for us to serve. It used to be we didn't need a group of people that believed what we believe to justify us believing it. It used to be that we didn't refine what we believed by how well it was accepted by others that we presented it to. We've got it all mixed up today. One of the main things I want to talk about, it's almost like it's peer pressure service to the Lord. We have a church to keep us in line and keep us motivated and keep us going for God, if you will. I grew up in one church, and we were in there actually for a little while, so there's tons of examples that I'm using. But his main idea, you know, the same guy that said, come back Wednesday, get your spiritual batteries recharged for Sunday. You know, he used that mentality a lot. His same idea was to come on Tuesday night, soul winning, visitation, door knocking. Come on Saturday for bus route visitation. And then come on, I think it was Friday for the men's dinner or something like that. To keep you going for God. He presented it as if you could not have a drive or a potential to serve God without surrounding yourself with people who serve God every waking moment of the day, or you were going to backslide. You were going to drop off. You just can't do this. And we've used that in the church today, that you cannot do it. And that's true. We do not do it in our own power. But the idea is drawn into the idea that we cannot do it without other people. But let's read right here in 12:26. It's one of the verses I'm gonna use. We got three or four we're going to read, but let's just start here. John 12:26 says, if any man serve me, let him follow me. And where I am, there shall also my servant be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor. Usually every sermon out of this verse is built out of the last five or six words of this verse, where him will my Father honor. But we're not going there today. We're going to focus on the first part of the verse. It says, if any man serve me, let him follow me. The church today, as we just reviewed, is built on group service, group worship, group everything. Everything has to be a group. We have Facebook groups that were instantly added in as soon as we step into a church. It's like Walmart has it where the monitor's phoned when you walk in there to see how many people are there. That technology's out there. And one church up in It's either California or right above it there, Washington or California. There is a church where it monitors how many devices are connected to the free Wi-Fi. And that number is displayed at the entry of the church as to how many people are in attendance, because there's too many to count. It also doubles as them praising the Lord for the set number of people that they have in the church. They're encouraged not to turn their phones off, because the Lord uses everything in their services. It's a kind of a trip. I wish I remembered the name of the church. But that's what we've come to. We've come to group everything, and that's just the way we're rolling. Nobody wants to do individual service. Nobody wants personal responsibility to their walk with Christ. We've turned it into a relationship with Christ that's almost unholy. This relationship with Christ, in their eyes, is just like a relationship with anybody else. And look how we're going with that. Marriages nowadays, to make a marriage work, one works all the time, the other works all the time. They each have their own money, and they run into each other maybe every evening. They go out for dinner. They celebrate holidays and special occasions together. And that's about the extent of their relationship. So we've taken that relationship model and turned it into the Christian's walk with Christ, where we maybe occasionally bump into him on special occasions and holidays, where he has his holiness and I have my holiness. That's not the way this is to work. And the way to get back to where we need to be is exactly what I'm saying, go back. We've taken too many, quote-unquote, progressive steps forward in the church. I talked a lot in a college class this past 10 weeks about perception and filtering and everything. And then we moved on into what is diversity. And we had a big old discussion, because we come from all walks of life, on what diversity is. And you had to define it in your own words. Diversity, what everyone come up with, was what we used to progress a company or progress a society to higher levels of thinking or ideas. That was the main focus of the discussion board, was everybody's definition of diversity. I got on there, I said, I don't think diverse, and I explained what diversity actually was, and I said, I don't think it's to progress, but more improve what we already have in a company. I was just sticking with a company form because I wasn't getting into all that. But their whole deal, I mean, one of them even listed, said in a business, society, religion, or, you know, whatever. He just went through like five examples. But he had to throw religion in there because we're supposed to be progressive for Christ. How absurd can you get? So, in this verse it says, if any man serve me, let him follow me. It doesn't say, if any man serve me, let him join a church. Let him serve with a church. Let him, you know, join a group. It never says that. Every time the Bible refers to service to God, it's about an individual. It's focused towards if a person. It never refers to if the church wants to serve me, this is what they'll do. It's always, if a man do this, he will be my servant. Keep focused that this is not about our relationship with the church, but it's our identity with the church, as the church. The church is not a building or a group, it's a person. Keep that in mind. We talked about that, I think, a couple months ago. Being part of the church doesn't mean being part of a church. And we're going to read a couple more verses here. In Colossians 3:23, it says, and whatsoever you do it heartily, as to the Lord, not unto men. And there it is again, ye do, not we do. We have to keep in mind that the future of all this that we have rests on not a group of people, but everybody individually. We spend a lot of time with our noses in other people's business and other people's lives, and having opinions about what they should or shouldn't be doing. Personally, I think we've spent too much being judged not people that we've forgotten to realize that we will be judged. This new group thinking encourages you to walk with Christ and to serve Christ with the church. It encourages you to stay with these people, to come to our Bible groups, do all this. But what are they learning? They spend so much time hammering home that they have to be there to actually keep them there that we're missing the actual point. Even in Baptist churches, we spent too much time teaching our children that the wicked will be condemned and judged that we forgot to tell them that they will be judged themselves. We spent so much time in marriage counseling class that we forgot to tell the man that the standard and what will be judged for his entire family. We have not taught what needs to be taught in order for our churches to line themselves out. Individuals, you will be judged by you, not by your church. The service of the individual is more important than the service of a group. A service of a group is easily enough to blend in and do what they're doing because peer pressure. Peer pressure is a real thing, especially in religious circles. I had one guy give a testimony that he went to a church up there in Springfield. It's probably that same one we see where it's a big one, where everybody had their hands raised in worship to Christ with the music. He said he didn't really know why, but he put his hands up too. And that's the way it rolls everywhere. We got people out there doing whatever, wearing their hair a certain way, saying certain stuff, wearing a certain clothing in church because they don't really know why, but this person does it over here. But we take for granted that they don't know why. It's because they're serving with the group instead of with their heart. We need to keep ourselves in line and know why we're doing what we're doing so that the church can be a witness to everyone else. We've turned the church into some sort of support group for sinners, some sort of homeless shelter almost. And we've done that because we're a group now. The church is a group. Well, the church is not a group. It's an individual serving Christ. In Galatians 2:20, we hear it all the time. It says, I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. Everyone knows what Christ did for the church, but do you know what Christ did for you? Anytime Paul talked about Christ, he was generally in reference to what he has done for him. He knew what Christ did for him, and he knew he did it for you too. We need to know what Christ has done in our lives in order for us to tell people what he can do for theirs. I just got a couple bullet points to go through here and we'll be done. I know we're running a little late. But the church has been manipulated to think a church as a whole is the work of Christ, defeating the thought of a personal work for Christ. And all the work is done at the church. It's your due diligence to come to church and do the activities, come to a work day, work with them, and get going on that. But service is not about that. Anywhere in the Bible, the work of Christ was done by a singular man with one goal. And looking through the Bible, every man that did the will of Christ had that same goal, Old and New Testament. It was to glorify him in every work that was done. It wasn't so that his name would be put in the Bible and, hey, that's pretty cool. It was because God told him to, and he did it. Anytime that these men are praised in the Bible, it's because they did what God said, because God said it, because they wanted to please him. They loved him, and they wanted to do what he said. Such should we do. Service is for the individuals, not a group. And we've gotten too tied in with that mob mentality of the church, that we're just going to crusade for Christ, because the more people that do it, the more things are going to get done. And we have many studies that prove that the more people get involved in something, generally the bigger mess it's going to be. Because unless we're all serving one God with one purpose, as one person, then we can't get anything done in a group. Groups have leaders. Groups tend to follow leaders. If that group is following this leader and not following Christ, then there is no real purpose. We've turned into a school of fish instead of fishers of men. Christ said that, "Follow me and I will make you fishers of men," which is the whole, you know, to preach. It's all right there. So why do we sing songs about it but not do anything about it? You see, we come from a generation before mine where they weren't afraid to do something on their own. They didn't have to ask for help because they were going to figure it out. We come from an innovative generation. We come from a generation that was willing to come out, willing to come to church if he was the only one sitting there. He was willing to believe the Bible if he was the only one to sit there. And we've turned into a generation that is afraid to do anything without two or three people sitting beside him. The people in the church today have grown up, even in Baptist churches, that have pushed youth groups. They pushed young people groups. We've just grouped off into different segments of the church with no one on the same page. We've turned it into some sort of grade school development where you can only take this much here, or you only sing songs and eat candy in this place. And we've actually downgraded to where that's all the way up to the youth group. The generation we come from, I say we, but my dad, my grandfather, all them, weren't afraid to go out there and do something because it needed to be done. We've turned away from the character that people had and that wrote lyrics like, "Though none go with me, still I will follow." That wrote lyrics like, "Sound the battle cry. Lift the standard high for the Lord." There is no standard now. There is no character now. There is no true service now. What does Paul say when it comes to offering our body a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God? That is our reasonable service. If you look back on his generation or y'all's generation, you'll see a generation that's willing to read the Bible and find what they believe. But if you look at our generation, we're willing to find somebody to sit in the pew and get told what they believe. And they're carried about with every wind of doctrine. This new social church with peer pressure service is not how we are to live. And it's my generation, it's y'all's generation, that's going to pay for this. So this is where you got to make your choice. Are you going to be the one to keep this church running? Will you be the one that's going to stay in this church and stay with its foundations? Well, I'll tell you, if you're just sitting here listening for the sake of listening, it's not going to happen. How do you stay with the truth? It's not because he believes the truth. It's not because your dad believes the truth. It's not because your brother believes the truth. It's because you've heard the truth and not rejected it. You've heard the truth and you've accepted it as a fact in your own life. You've heard the truth and you've taken it and applied it to your heart. This is something that is for everybody to do. And there has to be a time in your life where you say, if it's in the Bible, it's in my life. It's not something we can sit in church and listen to and use it as some aha moment. It's not something we sit in church and say, "Man, I need to change that," and then forget about it as soon as you walk out the door. You'll notice that this generation has a real problem with commitment, which has contributed to this new type of church and service. And it's the little things we have to think about. Listening is a type of commitment. Because when you come in here, how many of us are guilty of staring at the preacher but not hearing a word he's saying? Most people. It takes discipline and commitment that you're going to sit there and pay attention for as long as he's talking. Not for an hour, not for 30 minutes, not for 45 minutes. Don't put a time limit. But as long as he's talking, you've committed that that man's saying what God has him to say, and so you're going to listen. And that comes with a commitment to God. So if you take that commitment and apply it, it has to go further. Listening and hearing are two different types of commitment. You can listen for an hour and a half as he preaches, but you have to commit to hear it in your heart and retain it. Thine words have I hid in my heart that I might not sin against thee. That goes farther than just hearing it and knowing it. You have to have it in your heart and apply it. We've just broken down commitment one thing at a time. We've broken down it in society, in marriage, in church, as we heard, that they will refund your tithes after 90 days if God has done nothing for you. Never have I heard of a no commitment church in all of my life. I mean, that's like zero commitment. That's like, well, we're sorry we wasted your time. Here's your money back. God doesn't come with a money back guarantee, because if you are his, I mean, that's not even a factor. It's a reasonable service. And us as young people, seeing all that absurdity, you know, some people think that's a great idea. And that should worry you. So commit to hearing, commit to listening, commit to Christ and knowing his concepts, his precepts, and what truth is according to his word. We've even torn a commitment away from the Bible by having 15 different versions in one church. Bring whatever version makes you the most comfortable and just read along with me. You can't do that. When they remove verses and change words, I mean, you can't even find where they're at in these versions. But you just commit to whatever truth sounds good to you. As long as it says Bible, his word is truth. Amen? Amen. That's how they work. I've heard it again on that radio station. He said, I don't care what kind of Bible you have, the truth is the truth. How wrong is that? Thy word is truth. You have to learn that and know it. Know whose word, which word is truth. Learn to discern it in your own heart. You have to put yourself out there and trust him. A lot of this about building walls everywhere in the society that's so popular, you can't build walls with Christ. You can't build walls with your church family. We're divided by doing that because we bought into all this. Well, I'd sell all your stock and buy into Christ and quit being so flip-floppy that we don't know what we believe. We need to get back to the days where we could sit there and think to ourselves, this is the truth out of the Bible, and quit interpreting the truth as we would have it. We've turned into a church where, yeah, he said it, sounds right, he's done his studying, but man, he's just wrong because I can't accept that. If you can't accept it, that's something wrong with you. If you can't accept it because you can't stand for this person to be right, there's something wrong with you. Pride is sinful. And it's what drives most churches today. That's why we have a individual counter at the door counting every phone on the Wi-Fi. Don't let pride keep you out of heaven. Commit to Christ and what he's done for you. Humble yourself, know the truth, and let it set you free. Don't be part of a church, be part of the church. Just worry about it from there.